Okay, thank you, Niyesh. So we'll be talking about ever-present Lambda in Cosmo MC. This is what I did a while ago with Niyesh and Raphael. So I will briefly introduce two models. I skipped the part about causal sets since it has already been done in the previous talk. And then I will talk about ever-present Lambda and cosmic microwave background. And if I have time, I'll briefly talk about the BAO measurement as well. So the first model was proposed by Ahmed. It assumes that the universe is spatially homogeneous and dark matter undergoes a random warp. So you assume that at a certain time, t, the universe has a volume vt, and then you update the scale factor a using the Friedman equation, the first equation here, and then you can calculate the volume later at time t using the second equation here. And then the number of causal elements will then be the volume divided by the Planck length raised to the power 4. And then you can calculate the energy density at time t plus delta t, to be given by this equation, where S of t is the free action, where you consider the action and then the gravitational action, then you ignore or you subtract out the curvature. So you are left with just the cosmological constant and the volume. So that is S of t. And we have those two parameters here, alpha and eta. Alpha gives the magnitude of the fluctuations. Psi is a random number.
From 0 to 1, is that right?
Yes.
Random from 0 to 1, is that right?
Yes. And then model 2 is less intrinsic than model 1, but it's simpler to simulate. So we again assume that the universe is spatially homogeneous, and lambda is assumed to be a random function of cosmic time again. When we introduce two parameters, alpha that controls the magnitude of the fluctuations, and nu controls the coherent time. So this is the proposal. So you assume that it's a Gaussian process with this given correlation function here, where lambda here is, now we're not using a scale factor, but we're using log of a, which is lambda, which appears in the exponents. And then alpha, as I say here, it's the magnitude of the fluctuations, and mu controls the coherent time. And we wanted it to between minus 1 and 1. So that's why we are using omega dot. And then omega dot energy will then be given by the hyperbolic tangent of omega hat.
Yeah.
So, as.
So, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I just want to. So, in this here, what the correlation length is, but in model 1 there is also a correlation length which has to do with how frequently you make the random warp, like a random step.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a parameter that sets delta t?
In model one.
In model one, how was delta t?
In model one, it just comes out it just comes out of the equations. It's not something that is bound by some parameter, unlike in model two.
Yeah, so it's hidden. I know, but there is a correlation length in this equation.
Yes, there is.
And
there is one. And it turns out that it's for model two, the histories of dark energy that have good fit to data, they have the same correlation time with the one that we have in model one.
Okay. So here you make the control over the correlation.
Yeah, so if you go back to model one, Nasipia, could you do that? So here, I guess we're trying to figure out where is the correlation length hidden here. So the B of t is the thing that's increasing over time, and then rho lambda is S of t. So I'm just trying to see.
I think it has to do with the light cones, because V of t is actually the volume of the past light cone.
Right. But it's S of t, but I don't see S of t defined anywhere.
S of t is if you have the action and then you remove the curvature, so you are left with just the free, the lambda times integral of volume.
So is S just a rho lambda times V?
S is just lambda times dV.
Lambda times. Is it an integral S or is it just right?
Yes.
It's an integral.
It's the integrator.
So I think roughly the thing that controls the correlation length is that you kind of is the doubling of the volume or something like that. That was kind of my intuition, that the V of T is basically you're doing a random walk in the volume, in the four volume. So if your volume doubles, then you kind of lose your memory. So I don't know if
there's... Forgetting time.
So I guess the question is there a free parameter here that you could make the forgetting time longer or shorter? And I mean, that's what I just worked in. there is no free parameter here. That you could, it's always V of T. Mm-hmm.
But isn't alpha
going to
be
yes,
really
there's a free...
And doesn't alpha relate to the forgetting time, or?
I think alpha, yeah. So in a random walk, you could say there are two parameters, but they are degenerate to each other. It's
yeah.
the size of the step, and it's the frequency of the step.
Right, yeah.
And I think the frequency is set by delta t in your approach, but the size is set by alpha.
Yeah,
they're degenerate. So you control both the correlation length
mm-hmm.
and the size in one parameter.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there is a free an unknown parameter, which is the relation of the size, the nominal Planck size to the fundamental volume.
Right.
So that's
that's
something of order.
That doesn't help with the forgetting time, I guess. That's just the amplitude of fluctuations. That's what... So basically, I mean, your uncertainty principle, what goes in there, which is, I guess, the Poisson noise, that just controls the amplitude of fluctuations, I guess. I don't think it affects the forgetting time, although I'm not 100% sure.
Amplitude in a random walk.
Yeah.
You could imagine n steps being equivalent to one shorter step.
Right. No, but I said this is not just a random walk, because you're always around zero, and that's, I think, just because you keep dividing by the volume. So I guess action is doing a random walk, but then the Kazmarska constant you divide by the volume, so that always decreases, right? So there is there is a free factor there, I guess, that. That basically, what is the I guess I'm trying to figure out, is that correct?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think there's a free factor that changes the amplitude, but then I don't think there's a factor that you could use to change the forgetting time. Now, do we want to change the forgetting time? I don't know, maybe not.
That's something ideally would be provided.
It's a prediction of the theory, actually, so again, you don't have to make it a free parameter, right? Okay. Well, thanks. Let's see, go on.
Okay. So here I have a plot of model one, which is the black one, and then two plots for model two, which is the green and red. And then I have lambda CVM, which is the blue one. So this is just a plot of to give an idea of how this histories of dark energy look like. So you have the ever-present lambda fluctuating and present at all times, and lambda CDM switches off at some point.
What is omega lambda? Is it rho lambda divided by rho holo?
Yeah.
At all times?
Yeah.
Or, so it's rho lambda divided by rho toto
at the redshift of Z.
At every Z.
Okay. I actually have a formula here. I can tell it at the end. It's a very simple formula for the correlation between lambda in one time and lambda in another time.
Okay, so there's a formula.
There's a formula. It's a simple formula, and it agrees with what you said.
Okay.
All we need.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, then in fitting in with Cosmo, we use Cosmo MC to fit with to test this model for the cosmic microwave background data. So we assume that the universe is flat, so that limits we set K to be zero. So, but our model, as I've said before, is a stochastic one here. So you have these two parameters, alpha and mu, and then you add another parameter, which is the seed. So for the same value of alpha and mu, you can get different histories of dark energy. That will give the different age of the universe and different values of dark energy today, omega dark energy today. So this is an extra parameter which we don't expect the likelihood to converge in Cosmo MC to converge for it. So this can run forever because we have a random seed that we are putting in as a parameter. We did that because we couldn't figure any other way to do it, since for each value of alpha and nu, you can have 1,000 histories of dark energy. So no questions on
this. This is fooling Cosmo MC to get it to do your work for you, in some sense.
So which part is fooling?
Treating the random seed as if it was a parameter of the model. So Cosmo MC would try to fit for it, but of course that doesn't make sense. But in so doing, it'll randomly try different values of the seed. So it'll generate a lot of realizations.
So in principle, we could have just picked the amplitude of Fourier modes, I guess, as free parameters. I guess that's kind of what Levon and Gian do. They just have, I guess, they do it in Fourier, they do it in real redshift, but if you use the Fourier basis for the redshift, you could have just used the amplitude of those as free parameters, but you would have had a lot of free parameters there. So here we just have one free parameter.
You give it to Cosmo MC as free parameter.
Yeah, that's
oh, yeah, then you have
that. So you basically Fourier transform the density of dark energy, omega dark energy, as a function of redshift or log of redshift. And then amplitude of every Fourier mode would be a free parameter.
So we'll have like 1,000, if we are sampling 1,000, then we'll have 1,000.
Do you have 1,000 Fourier modes?
I think we were sampling 1,000.
Is that okay? I thought it was 1,000.
But we can make it a little bit lower than that. And I think it would give us more information on, because right now, hold on, now jumping. We only know exactly what happens today. Or maybe let me just say that when I get there.
Okay,
so,
go ahead.
So these are the data sets that we used. The first four are CMB, and then the last ones are BAO data. So it looks that like we have a good fit. We have at least one history or several histories of dark energy in model 2 that are a good fit, as good as lambda CDM to the CMB data. So that is what this plot is showing here.
So this is part one realization.
This is one part
yes.
One realization. Yeah, yeah.
One realization that you found out of many IC tries.
Yeah. So most realizations are terrible fits, right? So. Yeah.
Yeah, by construction, most will be terrible because they won't have even the correct current value of omega lambda. I mean, it'll be distributed more or less within the sign being more or less 50-50. Slight preference for positive sign, it turns out. But anyway, basically, 50-50.
Yeah.
So these are the best histories. So this is what I was trying to say, that maybe sampling the modes exactly, because then that will tell us more about the good, how the good fits look at each Z. Now this tells us that the important Z in Cosmo, I mean fitting for Cosmo MC, is at Z0 and at Z about 1,000 over here. So you want to it to be omega dark energy to be around 0.7 at Z is equals to zero and close to zero at 1,000. And after that, it can do anything in between. So maybe sampling, this new sampling could help shade more light in what happens, or if the CMP data really doesn't care about what happens in all the other sets. If I understood correctly, the new sampling will be more like fitting at specific Zs. Like you'll have a free parameter here, here, and here, from several places. Oh, that's not how it's going to look like.
Are you saying we could make a different model that only ask about?
No, a different way to fit in Cosmo MC instead of, because the way we're fitting now is you take a history, you fit for it, and then it gives you the results. But in this case, instead of using a seed, you will use several modes. So you have 1,000 new parameters, or at least 100 new parameters that you'll be fitting for. So they might give more information because they might converge, unlike the seed that never converges.
But I doubt that the 100 parameters also would never converge, probably. But some of them might. So, like, probably the low modes might converge, but the high modes probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I see. You're saying if you could organize the parameters so that some of them with the value of lambda now, the value of lambda now, the value at recombination, at certain important points, those particular ones might converge. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting question. Sorry. So can you random walk back in time?
No, not easily.
It's illegal. So you cannot, can you start with universes that the lambda will measure and see what prior histories?
Sorry, I don't understand the question. What do you mean random walk?
So you, as I understand, you start from small volume and you walk up to big volume, and then you hope that once in a while you have omega lambda compatible with current value. You could also take only consider universes in which omega lambda is what we measure and try to go back in time. This way you have a big boost in efficiency.
So,
and you will still have, on that subset of models, you would still have those that don't fit the data in other ways, but at least you'll be more efficient because anthropic kind of selection.
I call it anthropic. It's just, just matching the real world.
I mean, it seems like it's a choice of, it's a Bayesian approach that you use the prior from the data, from what you have to kind of MCMC.
Can you start with omega lambda today and go back?
The problem is there's no, it's not possible in principle to do that. However, I referred briefly, maybe, I can't remember, to the supernova fitting, which you say now is in Cosmo MC, so maybe. But at the time it wasn't, I think. At least we weren't aware of it. So, and there was some separate work done by Shiv Sethi and Avinash, his student at that time, to study the constraints from the supernova data. And he devised some approximation that allowed you to do what you want. It's not exact, it's not literally, it's not perfectly the same as this, but it does increase the efficiency. So that's all I know, is that at least for small redshift, probably a reasonable approximation to doing this. But in principle, the only way that I know to treat the problem is to start from small volume, because just because of the non-local nature of the lambda fluctuations. In order to know what they are at some z, you need to know something about the expansion profile for earlier z. Not all earlier z, because the very early ones don't contribute very much volume. You certainly need to look back in time.
So that's for model one, though. Model two is a different story. So, but you're
oh, I see. Model two is a different story. That's right.
But yeah, I guess model one is in some sense more fundamental. So, and I guess the answer is true.
Yeah, that's right. Shiv is doing it.
So in model one, you have this equation for S of t plus psi alpha, saying I cannot just take it to be the other things.
Yeah, S of t is doing a random walk in volume. That part is straightforward. The part that's hard is then what is volume as a function of time?
Yeah.
Because then you have to solve equations at each step. And, yeah.
I see. For model two, is it true that for model two, you could just put a constraint at the present value? I mean, you're working in Fourier space. But...
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard. I don't think it's going to be a straightforward constraint. But you could put constraints on a combination of Fourier modes. So there's nothing wrong. I mean, that's perfectly fine. But I don't know if it's very. I mean, you ideally, what you want to put in all the data and let the data tell you what the real solution is. So, if you want to put a constraint, you're kind of forcing things to be where they may not really be, because maybe omega lambda is not exactly 0.7,
right.
Or it's not maybe at redshift 0.7. Maybe it suddenly jumps to some smaller or larger number. So who knows?
So the real constraint would have to be some distribution around
0.7. So the real concern is whatever comes out of your MCMC, I think. So that's what you should do, which is what the MCMC has done.
So it's less efficient.
It's less efficient, but I think that's the nature.
But how efficient? It wasn't that unefficient. Didn't no CPO? Didn't you say? I can't remember now. That 20% of how many of the realizations get omega lambda around what it should be now? Do you remember?
Close to 20, less than
20%. Less than 20%, but more than 10%.
I can't remember, but it was a reasonable number from what I expected. I thought it was going to be close to 1 or 2%.
But 20% is reasonable, just because you have some random distribution between -1 and 1, and you say, okay, so how much is around 0.7? So
maybe it's not that big of an issue, the efficiency, loss of efficiency. Factor of 10 at worst.
Okay, so Nasipa, do you want to go on?
Okay, and then the question then becomes of, we do have a history that's a good fit, but how often do we get, given our model, how often can we get such a history of dark energy? So for this, we calculate this probability here, where chi red is given by chi squared over the sum of the number of omegas that you sampled. And chi squared is the sum of omega squared over the average of omega squared. So for that, we did that for our model 2 ever present lambda and lambda CDM. And you can see that for lambda CDM, it is highly unlikely to come from such a model of dark energy. But our model that's a best fit is about 2 sigma away. So it's relatively likely. Okay, now moving on to the BAO.
That seems to be about as good as you could hope for. I mean, if you found it was 0 sigma away, you'd probably worry that that was too unusual. So, so in other words, this gets into a very general thing, which I guess we have scheduled for a later discussion.
That's right. So I think
how do you test a stochastic?
Mm-hmm. So we got to talk about that.
If your good fits are typical of the model, it seems to me that's, in a way, the most you can ask.
And I think Bayesian evidence also is along that direction. I mean, how often do you get a good fit? Yes. I think in some sense that's one way of defining Bayesian evidence. I mean, if it's just a tiny region of your parameter space gives you a good fit, then that has lower Bayesian evidence compared to if most of your parameter space gives you a good fit. Not typical, exactly what that means is.
Given that we already observed something. So we live in a particular universe.
Yeah.
Right? Which may be extremely unlikely.
It is extremely unlikely.
No
doubt.
But if we restrict ourselves on the subset, select only universes like ours, maybe not that.
Right. But okay, ultimately, what we want to do is compare, lambda CDM to ever-present lambda, and see, and I guess that's what you did, like with Bayesian evidence, and see which one, there's more evidence for. So it seemed that you were saying for your stochastic model, there is a little bit of evidence, not too much, but a little bit of positive evidence, right? So that's what you were saying. So
for a particular correlation length.
Yeah, for a particular correlation.
So if you tell me your correlation length, I can reconstruct lambda as a function of time.
Right.
And it will likely include oscillations, likely will be stochastic looking.
Yeah, so I think that's certainly what we should be doing.
You can assign evidence to that particular history.
Right. Okay, good. So that we should be doing that, and I guess that should be not to do this. Following this meeting. Okay, so let's see if you carry on.
Okay. So the baryonic acoustic oscillation provide another standard ruler for dark energy measurement. So in this case, what I have over here is data from several from the BAO supernova plus Planck. It's the blue one. Then supernova is the orange one. BAO is the purple one. And then the different models, model two, this is the best fit from the Cosmo MC. And lambda CDM is the blue one. So you can see that here, the blue and the purple boxes suggest that between 1.5 and 3, you expect that omega dark energy should be negative. So for lambda CDM, that's doesn't happen, but for model two, we have the possibility, and we can see that our best fit is within this box, two boxes here. So this is a good thing for ever-present lambda.
So Nasipia, can you remind me, did you include this BAO in the Cosmo MC, or this is not included in the Cosmo MC?
I think that's the next slide. So this plot here is it's just plot of the distance with Z. So the points here, the two boxes here, the interesting boxes here between 1.5 and 3, which are from these two points here, which are this last three data sets here. So the way included, I was able to get the data and include it in Cosmo MC. So that included in fitting in Cosmo MC.
So it was included in the, okay.
Cosmo. Okay. So the data points that were included in Cosmo MC here are the last three, the first one and the fourth one here. So the DR11, the 6DF and the alignment alpha ones were included in Cosmo MC, but the other data points were not included in Cosmo MC fit. So here, what I have in blue are the histories that were relatively a good fit in Cosmo MC. So you can see that they're within bounds for the BAO as well. So in conclusion, I can say that the histories of dark energy that are good fit to CMB, and these histories have omega dark energy approximately 0.7 at Z is equals to zero, and approximately zero at Z around 1,000. So these are the two sets that we found to be very important for dark energy. So maybe a better fit that doesn't use the seed will highlight some more important sets for dark energy. Also, these fits that are a good fit to CMB are also a good fit for BAO data. So more evidence as we get more data, maybe will shed more light to the ever-present lambda model. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Nasipia, did you have any more slides?
Not in this talk.
No, so I just wanted to make sure. So I also have some slides which I kind of remember from the first day. I had some other slides from this work which I could show because, I mean, for example, one issue that came up was the Hubble tension.
Right, but I was going to ask specifically about NoCPO. Didn't you have, I know somewhere you have slides also on this Hubble tension.
So do you want
to? Okay, I can just pull it up. I do have it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, if I can put it up, but I mean, if you're already there, then yeah, why don't you just pull up the Hubble tension slide as well? So, Nasipia, are you still there?
Okay. Yes, I'm just trying to compute. It's this one.
Uh-huh. And you hadn't used the recent this Hubble measurement in the fit, I guess, right? In the Cosmo MC.
No, I haven't used the new data that we have from Planck. This is all old data.
Right. So what you got from Planck is the an ever-present lambda is, I guess, the shade is the blue histogram.
Yes, it's the blue one.
And basically, we just have a broader distribution, which is, I guess, this is still consistent. So I guess one question is, can you update this analysis with new data or not? Is it lost somewhere on PI servers?
I think I'll have to rerun it.
Sorry, what's that?
Rerun it?
I'll have to rerun the code.
Yeah, but can you?
I think so, not in the PI. I don't have access to PI servers anymore.
Okay, so I guess that would be interesting because there is, of course, lots of new data that has come about since. Okay, so do you have questions for Nasipia or other topics of discussion? Rafa, you said you had the formula. Did you want to write it down?
Okay.
Ah.
a lambda, for example, the same as what some people would say rho lambda. The approximation is for normalized this is under the assumption that these two times are not too far apart. Okay, so under that approximation, you get 1 over delta V over V. Yeah, since delta V here, I guess, must mean an absolute value here. Delta V means just V, say V2 minus V1.
Correlations and die out as time passes.
Well,
even the correlations, sort of the, even when T1 and T2 are close in the large volume limit, the correlations would somehow die out much smaller.
But that's what I guess.
Yeah, that's
boss.
What that condition is.
So
does that.
So it looks like. The rough form of the correlator is something like this. What I have here. This is all model one, of course. It has, you see, it has a cusp here, and that's, if you go to, if Nancy Pimo were to show her first slide, or whatever it was, I don't know if it was the first actually, but an early slide where it showed. Compared model one and model two. Model one was much rougher because it's driven by a random walk. And that seems to correspond to the fact that this has a cusp, whereas in model two.
So, Rafa, these are two formulae, different formulae that you have?
Model two, I don't have. And model two is in the correlator.
Secondly, just approximation of the first one.
The second one is just.
And you normalize it to the coincidence.
Yeah.
And V1 and V2 are obtained using the random walk, which contain that parameter alpha, I suppose. So,
yes, that's
that. So it's still an arbitrary, there is an arbitrary number. Yeah.
That's right,
yeah.
Because that's right. This needs to be in fundamental units. We assume that the fundamental units are Planckian enough to order some unknown coefficient of order one. So, yes, that's right. But here, of course, in this one, the units have dropped out. Only in this approximation, the units have dropped out. And you only need the ratio of the two volumes. Or I mean, it would drop out here too, I suppose, if I divided, if I normalized it.
I guess that's somehow. I mean, when you look at the first one, you think that it depends on somehow the correlations seem to die out as you, even if the times are very close, they're less and less correlated with.
Yeah, that's just saying that the typical value of lambda is getting smaller.
Yeah.
Later
but
times.
This normalized one is the one that is independent of. What time you're at only depends on delta t, right? Or delta v.
Yeah, I mean, nothing deep at all is enough.
Yeah.
This I mean, I'm just agreeing with you. I think all of this, I'm just looking what I have here, but the approximation is just, I don't know why this is not even exact, but I'm sure it's not for some reason. Maybe I overlooked that it was exact, but anyway. And then model two was, built by assumption, it had Gaussian correlators. So I think that's the looked at in terms of the two-point function. That's the main distinction, aside from the extra parameter in model two, the main distinction is the shape of the correlation function. It's smooth and Gaussian in model two, but it has this cusp in model one. Even though model one is in some sense also a Gaussian model, it should be maybe stressed that when you say that the model is Gaussian, that doesn't tell you, that tells you nothing about what the correlator is, right? It just tells you something about how the correlator governs the whole probability distribution. But you can put in whatever correlator you want, and it's still Gaussian. But model two is kind of doubly Gaussian.
Yeah.
Not only is it a Gaussian process, but the correlator is chosen to be Gaussian.
Yeah.
That confused me for a while.
It was a confusing choice. Maybe we shouldn't have done it.
No.
So that's, of course, lambda 1, lambda 2 divided by lambda 1 squared, right? I mean, that's a particular time that you. So that's where it sort of.
This is lambda 1 or lambda 2.
Well, I mean,
I'm
you've written
that
it as lambda. Yeah.
Where
you've done it is lambda 1.
So that's the formula. I'm not sure you can use it directly, though. Because, I mean, it's in terms of these volumes, so you have to know what they... I don't know how easy that is to implement. Or, chat, how easy is that to implement? I don't know. It's not in terms of Z or in terms of A, but it's in terms of B. Given.
You would need a map from V to Z.
So, but do you need something?
A map.
From Z to Z.
Which is
yes.
Something like your model one.
Something like what? I could
like your model one.
Right. But this is model one, right? So model
yeah.
one.
This is
model one. You already have a map.
Yeah.
So.
Just a nice. I mean, so model one, this curve depends on V1, right? I mean, so that as V1 changes, so does your, then the, you know, the slope is going to change. It's going to get more and more cuspy. As with larger volume, the correlations die out faster. So that, which is apparent in the first formula there. So at early times, the correlations persist for longer delta V.
Why do you say it's logarithms of the early times?
Just because there's a dependency on dependence on.
Isn't it the other way? I'm getting.
So in early times,
yes.
The volume. So if I look at the first formula, I'd say that T2 is greater than T1. Then I just have 1 upon V2. Right. So then, as if I look at. So it doesn't matter what T1 is, right? Just something that.
Right.
So now if delta t is at a later time, so that means, in other words, t2 is at a, specifically t2 is at a later time, but delta t remains fixed, then that correlation dies out. So. Is that so? Maybe that delta t is really this.
Where is delta t? I don't even see.
In the axis.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering what one should be.
Oh, I should have said.
Yeah.
It could be delta v there. If
delta
you
v,
I was just giving the shape. Yeah. Maybe it would have been better to say.
Actually, it's not even delta v. It's like somehow normalized. Changes with V2, so the correlation changes with
V2. But Rafael is plotting it for a small separation.
Yeah.
So I think you could say it's.
More separation at what V2? That's what I'm saying.
So it's delta V over V if you want to.
That's right. That's okay.
No.
That's good. Now I'm happy.
So it's 1 and it goes to 0. Okay.
this is just an approximate, I think, for small separation.
So here is, the, I guess, the proposition, which is kind of comes back to the question of perturbations as well. So you have the proposal that lambda is a stochastic function of the volume, given by this correlation function. Okay. So it's a Gaussian random function of the volume with a certain correlation function, right? So that's your proposal. Now, the question is that enough to set up perturbations? Because certainly, even in a curve, I mean, in general, in space time, I can define the volume. Can I define a perturbation theory that way? Or I guess another way of putting it is that, is it the same function of the volume here as it is here, even though these two regions are causally uncorrelated with each other?
Well, that's the complication that we don't. I mean, it's assumed that it is the same, but then that's incompatible with. That's logically speaking incompatible with perturbations.
Why do you say it's incompatible?
If
I just say lambda is.
It's incompatible with covariance, I guess, is a better way to say.
At that point, it isn't. I don't think what I'm saying is incompatible. So if you just say lambda is a function of V,
yes,
right? As long as it's just same, you could say it's a function. Now, the question is, so it doesn't matter where you get it from. If you specify it as a function, then it we say it could be the same function here,
yeah,
or here.
Yeah.
And that sets it to be basically approximately homogeneous, basically regions that have the same for volume in the past article, and they have the same lambda, right? So it doesn't violate covariance.
Not in itself, but when you want to get, you have to say what is the dynamics for the.
Yeah. So the question is there, so would this be different lambda Vs? If you say these are different random processes that happen, but you could also say it's the same random.
Yeah, that's right. You could question, but I agree with it. That's what you're saying, right? This is a logically self-consistent proposal.
I guess another way is that does the universe start with the same seed everywhere? Or this random number generator of the universe, is it the same everywhere, or are there different seeds in different places? And,
yeah, I mean, I could mumble some words about sequential growth of causal sets that would try to make it plausible that exactly your proposal is what's going on. How plausible, I'm not sure. But certainly, if you think that everything originated from one single seed, one, not seed in that sense, but originated from one single small region of the causal set, everything was in causal contact. Everything is sort of to the future of that. So I don't think it's not physically incoherent to make an assumption like this. But it's still rather ad hoc. I mean, it's also not. It's not required at all, but we could do that. But then, what's the next step?
So then the question is, can we set up perturbation theory?
Yeah,
but this doesn't look like. So you have a if you you can always think about the volume of the past white cone as a scalar, but what is the differential equation that is a scalar?
So you have
how do you plug it into?
So you'll also have to, so just like you have time-time correlation, you'll also have to have spatial correlations put in, right? So you'll have to have some way in which the spatial correlations.
I think we done that. So we just say that lambda, there's a function that you can generate it using some random number generator. And if you better generate that.
Lambda equals f of v.
Yeah, we call it just f of v or something. This is some function that's the same everywhere, basically. Now,
is a random function.
It's a random function, right? So V4 has fluctuations. Like V4 is not a homogeneous function, right? In general. But then how we can actually compute what V4 is, I put it in perturbation theory, I'm not sure if it's a straightforward exercise.
Sorry, Nayesh, are you saying that you're looking at an inhomogeneous case?
Yeah.
You're looking at possibilities of inhomogeneity.
This could be completely inhomogeneous. This is only the statement that lambda is a function of the past four volume.
Right, then that's for a given,
It could be in any space-time, it could be in a black hole space-time. So just different places would have different past or volume, they would have different lambdas.
For someone who is not...
Yeah.
So, if you start from your causal set, is that... And you think of lambda and d being conjugate, variables. So V was the integral over the entire volume.
But at that
point, there was no observer there.
Right.
So then, is that an additional assumption that volume would be stochastic in a different way for different observers because they're light cones? Or not observer,
yes.
But you know, past light cones.
Yes.
So is that an additional assumption that
I think that's what they made here, isn't it?
And so, is that the big...
I mean, I don't know if it's an additional assumption, but it's a making precise of the original assumption.
But I think if you assume there are causal processes that are involved, then it makes sense that...
Lambda should just be a function.
Just evolve, yeah. Just
so lambda becomes an observer dependent.
Yeah, I mean,
number.
It's their position dependent. Nah, I mean.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's also come up in some of the discussion.
But
if we observe lambda, does it?
Yeah, so light cone specific. It's light cone specific.
So I mean, of course, when you're trying to incorporate in homogeneities, then you want to do it over the homogeneous thing, and then you look at the fact that the past volume here and the past volume here, even though there'll be fluctuations due to that. So it's,
mm-hmm.
you know, the number of fluctuations there.
Right.
But then you still, so wouldn't you still want to have a spatial correlation? I mean, just like we have time-time correlation of this random variable.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you also want to have a spatial correlation between...
No, but this is not...
You don't have to, but I'm just wondering what...
You
would have to... So when you're thinking of the stochastic process, you need to put in that correlation.
No, I don't think you need to put it in, because you need to tell us what you mean by spatial correlation. What do you mean by... what slicing are you talking about?
No, I just mean with any space-time point... I mean... between lambda at one space-time point correlated to lambda at another space-time point. So not slice-dependent.
But the point is that here you inherit that correlation from the geometry. So if you have some underlying geometry which has fluctuations, like for example, we have...
Wouldn't you need the same formula like this one?
Oh, you might, in principle, there should be a formula. You wouldn't need to put it in to do the simulation.
So here you do put it in, right? For the time correlation?
Yeah, that's the difference.
Oh, I don't understand why that's...
I mean, it depends how you've done the simulation. If you do it by the random walk, then you don't need to put this in. This comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to say, I will define my Gaussian process by the correlator, then you need to put in the correlator. But what Nyayesh is pointing out is, once we say that, and we say it depends, if we say that it's a fixed function f of v that's valid everywhere in space-time, then we just need to generate once that random function f of v, which will have this two-point, it'll guarantee to have
all
this
correlation. All over the space-time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everywhere in the space-time. Okay, so that's right.
So like the B4 would be something like there would be a homogeneous part, let's call it B4 0, and there would be some inhomogeneous part that involved integral from, say, from 0 to now, dgx, and then it would involve like, I don't know, metric perturbations, phi of x, and between the.
You mean in the course of set, it just comes here?
Yeah. No, this is just, I'm just doing it in a homogeneous term. Because you're just integrating over the metric perturbation in the past dive cone. And then if you then accept, so what are the correlations of lambda from point to point? You just plug this into this formula and you just tailor expand f. So f of b4 is approximately f of b4 zero plus f prime of b4 zero plus times delta b4. And this delta b4 would be linear perturbations here. So the two-point special correlation of this would depend on the special correlation of metric perturbation. So
which you put in as initial.
As initial conditions,
from
inflation, it evolves over time. So basically, the lambda inherits whatever correlations that exist in your space-time through this function.
But you're going to put in those perturbations as well as the stochastic.
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, so the idea is to put in both the both these initial perturbations along with the stochastic values of lambda, is it?
Yeah,
it's stochastic, but it has a homogeneous component.
About,
so V4 is stochastic in time.
Mm-hmm.
V4 zero is still stochastic in time.
But it's kind of a, you
so,
have to do it self-consistently. It's not easy to do this.
I mean, you could just drop the second term and just look at the stochasticity just of the itself.
You want to include, if you want it to be a geometric or a covariant theory, you need this to be, you need the full B4, which is the full for all. You cannot just look at the homogeneous form. So I think this is...
If you just looked at stochasticity on the homogeneous background, but you allow the stochasticity itself to be spatially dependent. Right? I mean, then.
Actually,
I don't understand why the two have to go hand in hand.
You could think about it as actually an in a local Einstein action, right? If I tap this. Right? This is a covariant action. It's an unlocal one. So. Can you actually?
That's exactly what I was thinking about a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
You weren't probably here when.
Maybe, yeah.
You were. Yeah. So, but I didn't. The problem with this is that when you try to derive equations from. I mean, it is in some sense consistent. But when you try to derive equations of motion from it, you see that you get a dependence on the future as well as the past. If you think it through, it wasn't obvious to me at first, but. After you think it through, it's obvious. So you don't get causal equations, or you get partly anticipating equations. I don't really know how to handle such.
It's differential and integral.
Yes, you definitely get a differential integral equation. That's all right. But if that's not a problem.
Yeah.
If the time evolution at every point in space-time, I mean, if the rate of change of the various quantities only depended on the past, then you'd be able to solve it. But when you trace through how the variations work, it seems to depend on the future as well. So I don't. So you can't do it just by choosing initial conditions and then evolving forward. That's the rub or the wrinkle in the.
Is that something non-trivial to show?
It's actually in the end sort of trivial, but